In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
In my 27 years as a Victorian policewoman, I investigated everything from a stolen bicycle to a stolen life. Policing taught me a lot about human nature, which I explore in my podcasts with a variety of fascinating guests discussing the human side and impact of crime, not only on their lives, but mine as well. My podcasts are not suitable for children and some adults for that matter. If you find yourself affected by my subject matter, please contact Lifeline or any other support service or person that you feel comfortable with. My guests provide their recollection of an event or incident, sharing their thoughts and their emotions, but it's theirs and not everyone will agree with them. I understand that and I hope you do too. Thank you.
I can hear a noise outside and he's at the back door and he's smashing the back door down with a crowbar. And all I remember is him racing towards me with this crowbar just screaming at me.
In my role as a podcaster, I receive a variety of emails from listeners, some of them suggesting a guest they think I might be interested in. Some just say thanks for a particular subject matter that I've discussed, some asking for advice, and some just want to share some information that they've been or a situation that they've been part of or involved in. And I've got to be honest, to have a complete stranger contact me and feel comfortable enough to share such a personal, often troubling time of their life with me makes me feel very humbled and honoured. Every single time. I love the fact that those who contact me are generally normal, everyday people who might have had something traumatic, troubling, or frightening happen to them or someone close to them. And these emails are pure gold because their stories to me come from the heart and they haven't been contaminated or sensationalised by a journalist, for instance, wanting to be, you know, the first with the story or maybe tarting it up a bit to get more hits or seeking some shock value. The people that email me, they don't have that notoriety. They haven't been on the front page of the paper or had their story told on the nightly news or in a TV special. They just want to tell me their story. And such was the case with my guest today, Sarah. Sarah, it's not her real name, heard an interview I did and she contacted me to thank me for shining a light on mental health, a subject very close to her heart, as I found out. There was a line in her email which really stood out to me and it caught my eye. It said, quote, "What's interesting is that I'm a psychologist, the very type of person who should know better than to get into a relationship with a narcissist, or so you would think," unquote. And, you know, it made me think how just because we're experts in a particular field, it doesn't render us incapable of experiencing emotions or situations that every other human being feels or is affected by. And when we do, we often feel disappointed maybe in ourselves for feeling that way. Because she's a psychologist, it seemed to me Sarah thought she should have been able to identify the signs of a narcissist and avoid them. But don't we all tend to brush off little concerns or niggles we have when we meet somebody we like? Forming a relationship, it's about accepting and respecting each other's differences and accepting that none of us are perfect. And Sarah is no different, psychologist or not. So with that intro, thanks for taking your time out of your busy day, Sarah. And from the conversations we've had, I know this is just about the last thing you expected, yeah. But I'm so grateful for you agreeing to share your story with us.
Cool.
You didn't expect to be a guest of mine, did you?
No, I didn't. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, likewise. Look, it'll be fairly obvious that Sarah is from New Zealand, and I might appear a bit vague at times and need her to repeat a few words here and there, but bear with me. That's both Sarah and my listeners.
It's fine.
So, as I said in the intro, the fact that you felt as a psychologist that you shouldn't have fallen for a narcissist, I just thought it was you were being very harsh and unkind to yourself. So maybe we might start off if you can explain or describe what a narcissist is.
Yeah. So to be quite honest with you, I didn't know what one was. I may be a psychologist. My training was about 20 years ago, and I had never come across the term. I'd never heard of it until I was thrown in the deep end. Somehow found out about it, looked it up, and was like, wow, this is my life. Basically, to me, my take on a narcissist is someone that a gaslighter, really good storyteller, they lack empathy, and I think that they tend to live a really sort of grandiose idea of who they are in their mind.
Yes.
Yeah, that they will never blame themselves. It's everyone else's fault, and they are just, in their eyes, perfect.
Would you say that my experience would also include they're arrogant?
Oh.
Would that be a...
Oh, 100%. Yes, absolutely arrogant. And it's funny because my ex, I knew him from my childhood, and I remember thinking back then I thought he was arrogant as well, so I don't know why I thought he would have changed. But, yeah, that was my first take on him, arrogant.
Oh, okay. So even when you were kids, you yeah. saw that, not that you had a word for it, obviously, yeah. but you believed that he was pretty full of himself.
Absolutely.
And thought himself was
yeah,
pretty hot.
Yeah, definitely.
And was he?
Was he hot?
Yeah.
Everyone else thought he was. He was the typical surfy, good-looking dude back then. I wasn't into that, and I was really sort of repulsed by the arrogance. Yeah. So don't even ask me what changed that perception.
That was going to be the next question. Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, as an adult, we, I guess, re-met each other as adults, and it sort of went from there really quickly. Yeah.
Your story, which we'll get to shortly, it's inspiring on many levels, but it's also horrendous. Inspiring because it confirms to many that no matter how educated or intelligent someone is, that sometimes where matters of the heart are concerned, our decisions aren't always right, are they?
Yeah.
And also your story is horrendous. Just due to the trauma and suffering that you've experienced. And we will get to that shortly. Mm-hmm. So you may have answered it, I'm not sure, but so how do you think your narcissist partner got under your radar? Because clearly as a younger person, you were almost turned off by that, let's say, arrogance.
Yeah.
But somehow he managed, to get under your radar. Can you tell us how that happened?
Yeah, I think that when I re-met him as an adult, I was going through a time in my life where I had quite low self-esteem. I was raising a child at the time, and I didn't really get out much or any of that. So for this person to reemerge and, I guess, give me attention, it's what I wanted at the time. He was very arrogant when I re-met him as an adult, and I wasn't really that interested, but he was so persistent. So he tended to be really pushy about wanting to meet up, about wanting to do things together. And just over time, my no wasn't taken as a no. So he just wouldn't listen to me. And then it just time crept up, and I think within 3 months we were pregnant.
Gee, yeah. Okay. That changes the whole ball game.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And it was, from there that everything went south.
Mm. So I suppose the fact that you are pregnant to this man, that it wasn't so easy to walk away, was it? Like there were added responsibilities, I suppose, wasn't there?
Yes, I definitely felt trapped because at that point I was obviously trying to get out of the relationship. I didn't even call it a relationship at the time. He was doing the whole love bombing, all of that, then got pregnant and realized, okay, maybe we just have to do this and we have to soldier on and get through it. Yeah.
When you say the love bombing, can you describe the sort of things? Because from my point of view, and from obviously you would agree, I think, that from a professional point of view, this is a very typical this is very typical behaviour of that coercive control. And so the love bombing is very, very prevalent in somebody that has that sort of control. So can you tell us about that a bit?
Yeah, so love bombing, again, had never heard of it, didn't even know what it was until the great thing, hindsight. I guess he knew what to say to make me feel happy. It was the words I wanted to hear. I was given everything. So I was given lots of gifts, and I was given time, his time and attention. This was all at the start. So within the very first 3 months, I think he was able to read what I needed and give me all of that.
That's another word that comes to mind with a narcissist, is how manipulative they can be or they are. And as you said, he could like almost read the room. He could read you. He knew what you needed. He knew what – I mean, it's not hard, is it, to work out what some – like a single mum, I gather.
Yes.
That's what you were when you met him. Yeah. So a single mum, you know, you're struggling. It wouldn't be hard to win somebody over, particularly when you have a lot of attributes that are – you know, pleasant.
Yeah.
He's nice looking. He's, I imagine he was very good with his words.
Yeah.
With his actions. And I mean, I think how could somebody not, in a way, how could somebody not fall for that?
Yeah. And I think when I look back, I'd never encountered a person like this. I had never encountered someone to be so cruel, so manipulative, so unkind. So when it's happening in this really bizarre way where you start to think you're going a bit crazy and you get swept away, it's hard to see at the time because you just don't believe that people are like this.
But also you're swept up in that that honeymoon period where the world, it's just so lovely, and you don't see the bad, because you just see the good and you just think how lovely this is. It's hard to imagine that it turns so sour.
Yeah,
isn't
and
it?
There were definitely a lot of red flags along the way that I should have picked up on, but, didn't, ignored them.
Actually, that was going to be my next question. I was going to say that in your own time, in your own words, can you tell us, I know you don't like to call it a relationship, but let's say, can you tell us about your liaison with this man and when you first started to realise that the relationship wasn't what you'd sort of hoped for, and when you decided enough is enough?
Okay. So, yeah, I guess when we got pregnant with our first child, I started to feel quite trapped, and it was during that pregnancy that a lot of red flags popped up for me. So he was almost able to drop the act. The love bombing sort of stopped then, and I guess he knew he had me. So I had a really bad pregnancy with a lot of health issues. So I was going to the hospital quite a lot, sick all the time, and he would go on these sort of week-long drug and alcohol binges where he would just disappear and I wouldn't hear from him for a few weeks. I wouldn't know where he was. At one point there were people turning up, knocking at my door at midnight. I later found out that they were looking for drugs. And this was really frightening because this is not a world I grew up in. This is so far from the person that I am. So that was really scary, really stressful time. And so we had our first child. I was in the maternity ward for a few days, and I think on the second day he came in to visit with his friend, and my mum popped in, and there were only two chairs in the maternity ward and they didn't get up. And to me, that's a huge sign of respect, because I think, you know, this is my mother. Let her have a seat. Let her hold the baby. And they just sat there. And I remember my mother pointed that out to me afterwards and could not, she cannot believe that that even happened. She just thought that was so disrespectful. And I did too. But, yeah, all these things, you start making excuses for them. Mm-hmm. And I think the following day we had a big fight at the maternity ward, a verbal argument, and he stormed out and was gone for 2 weeks. So I had to return home with my baby, no idea where he was. So, yeah, I knew it was going to be tough from then on. So,
Sarah, can we just go back while you're on just the birth and being at the hospital? When you went into labour, did you tell him, and what was his response?
Yeah. So when I went into labour, he was sort of yelling at me on the drive from home to the hospital. I remember him yelling at me in the car to stop being so dramatic. He dropped me off at the door and then went and parked the car, didn't help me get in. This was very early hours of the morning. And I made my way in, and I'm really good under pressure. So I tend to be quiet and controlled, but his energy was just chaotic. So I was really stressed during the birth, and it was a really fast birth, and he just was not at all helpful. He kept telling me to just calm down, get over it. And funnily enough, I remember, so when you're giving birth, you're really thirsty. And I remember saying, please, can you give me a drink of water? And he'd give me the cup, hold it over to me with the straw, and wouldn't even hold the straw. So I couldn't even drink the water. Do you know what I mean? that just sticks in my mind, because it just shows, you know, that it was all about him.
What's sticking in my mind right at this stage, there's a lot, but the fact that your mother comes in to see you, and I don't know too many people, women or men, that wouldn't stand up for clearly an older person, whether it's a woman or a man, that doesn't matter. But it's just about respect, isn't it?
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. And that didn't fall well in my mum's mind. She did not like that. Mm. Yeah.
So You don't see him for, what was it, a couple of weeks when you go home and you've got the baby on your own with your other child there as well, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was a really tough year following that. I was very busy. He wasn't working. Most of the time that we were together in the first few years, he wasn't working. So he would come up with these, again, these grandiose business ideas that needed my investment, and they were great ideas, don't get me wrong, but he wouldn't be able to follow through. Something would always happen, and it was always someone else's fault. So we're losing money. I'm the only one bringing money in. Hugely stressful time. I'm the only one looking after the kids. So it was around that 1 year point, like our first child was one, that I wanted to leave. And then I found out I was pregnant with our second child. So, yeah, that was, I had been ready to leave. That pregnancy was a lot less stressful. I was a bit more confident about myself and realized I needed to get out of this situation, but I didn't know how. And so then I started to sort of get my, start saving a bit of money, coming up with plans, letting some people know that I wanted to get out of the relationship, and just having those sort of discussions with people. Mm-hmm. So then we had our second child. And that was really, really stressful time. I don't even know how I managed it. So by this time, he had started another business, maybe his fourth business, and it was doing really well. He was working really long hours. So I'm talking like 3 o'clock in the morning, and he would get home at 10 p.m. And I was working full time, still breastfeeding my youngest child and racing to her across town to feed at different times, and you know, making dinner, doing the bath time, putting them to bed. It was a lot. And he would often, in his downtime, so his weekends off, he would go hunting. He would go away on surfing trips. He would just disappear again for these like week-long periods where I didn't know where he was. So I, at that point with my second, with our second child, I realized that I had to pick myself up. So it was just me and the kids, and that's how I saw it. And we just got on with it. And he was sort of secondary at that point. But when you say what made you realize that the relationship wasn't working, I wanted it to end. That sort of happened when our first child was about 3 years old. I went overseas. So this was a plan that I had with a cousin to go away for 3 weeks overseas trip, which he was really jealous about. So he stayed with the children, and he knew nothing about my plans. He sort of knew where we were going, but he didn't have any real details about where we were staying. So I remember, it's about 4 a.m. We're in Amsterdam, and the phone rings next to the bed. Not even my cell phone. This is the phone, the hotel phone. It's not my cell phone. And I pick it up, and I'm like, hello. And it's him. I don't know. I still don't know to this day how he found out where we were. And he's just screaming at me that I had been cheating on him with someone because he had a dream, and this person looked like someone I followed on Instagram, and it was this really weird concocted story. And it was at that point that I just said, I've had enough. This is internally, I'm thinking, I've had enough. This is just weird.
It was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Was it ever? Yeah. And I decided that when I returned home, I would leave him. A second thing happened just after that is my auntie passed away when we were overseas, and I was heartbroken because this auntie was like a mother to me. So he informed me via text to say she's died. Literally, that was the text. Oh, your auntie's died. I'm like, okay, right. So our family holds things off and we return about 2 days later. I get off the plane. This is like a 20-hour flight. And he comes to pick me up and he's on the phone. And I get to him and he's just like, oh, I've had such a hard day. Oh, I'm so tired. It was all about him. And I'm like, hello? Like, you know? And he didn't attend the funeral, which was the following day, in which I read the eulogy. And that really hurt. I just thought, the one time I need you. Yeah. So, yeah, I decided it was over. And the funeral was on the Wednesday, and I left him on the Saturday.
How did you leave him? What was that day like?
We'd had an argument about something, and we're feeding the kids breakfast, and I just told him it's over. It's over. I can't do it anymore. And we'd had this discussion several times before, and he would be gone for a few days, come back, tell me everything I wanted to hear, and say all the changes he's going to make, it'll all go well, honeymoon period, and then we're back at square one. So this time I said, no, it's over. Again, he thought it's not really. So he moved out, and a week later kept trying to come back, and I was like, no, it's absolutely over. And that's when he started to click, oh, no. She actually means business this time.
And how did he take that? Was there any, what sort of response was there with him realizing that this time she means it?
So over the next 2 months, it was hell. It was absolute hell for me and my children. So he would break into the house countless times in the middle of the night. He knew where latches were loose on windows, or he knew how to get into the home. He would always be drunk, so he was really irrational when he would break in. There was one time where he broke in. The way I would describe it is he held me and the children captive. He trapped us in my bedroom. The kids are crying. They just are so tired. It's about 2 o'clock in the morning. And he keeps us up for hours and hours, threatening suicide, wanting to get back together. The kids were exhausted. And he finally left after about 3 hours of that, which was awful. On that occasion, he snapped my iPhone in half. I don't know if you've ever tried to snap an iPhone in half, but
no,
I still don't even
know. Haven't.
Yeah, So he snapped it in half because I had gone to grab it to ring for police and had already snapped it. A few days after that, so I'd got another phone, replaced it. He broke into the house again and he tried to wrestle it out of my hand. He tried to break it again. Because he couldn't do that, he stormed off, and as he left, he slashed all four of my car tires. It was just a lot of this, and I reported it to the police every time.
Just on that, that's in the back of my mind. The phone has snapped, yes, that's your lifeline. Mm-hmm. You don't have it. But you just said then that you reported that to the police.
Yeah.
What was their response? The fact that he's held you captive, he's broken into the house. I don't know if I really want to know the answer, but did they do anything?
At that stage, not really.
What do you mean, not really?
Well,
I can't believe that police, I do apologise to the New Zealand police, but I can't believe a police person would not take any action. Like, there's so much there that, well, from over here, you know, we'd at least be arresting him, interviewing, putting intervention orders in place, safety notices, maybe taking you somewhere where you're safe. I just, So what response did you have from the police?
At that point, the only thing I can remember, because I don't recall him being charged with anything at that time. He may have been, but I can't recall it. But I do remember I begged police to get me a safety alarm, because obviously me getting to my phone was an issue.
Yeah,
because he broke it.
Yeah.
He broke it, and then he tried to get it off me a second time. So I begged them, please get me a safety alarm. And they would say, yeah, we'll get you one. And it never happened. And remember, this is over a 2-month period, that constantly breaking in. And yeah.
You're saying that he's constant, not you're saying, he broke in constantly, and obviously you are reporting that each time.
Mm.
You've asked for a safety alarm, or begged for a safety alarm. That wasn't forthcoming. But when he was breaking in constantly, what sort of things was he doing, and how was he getting in?
So he was getting in through windows he knew latches were loose on, or he knew that I'd keep a certain window open, like the bathroom window, for example. He knew the house. He knew the layout, and he knew where he could get in. And so it was after the incident with the where he slashed the tires that police realized that this is really serious, and they tried to track him down.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
So that happened in the afternoon, and they still hadn't found him by that night. And I felt like I was just waiting at home, and I kind of felt he's going to come back. I need to get the kids out of this house. So I put the kids in the car and we sort of drove around for a few hours, and then I realized, oh, you know, they still hadn't found him, but I thought, no, we'll go back home. We should be okay. You know, I've got my phone. I can ring the police if anything happens.
And you've got three kids in the car that are obviously needing.
At that stage, I just had my two youngest with me.
Yep.
So we got home, put them into bed. Half an hour later, I can hear a noise outside, and he's at the back door, and he's smashing the back door down with a crowbar. And all I remember is him racing towards me with this crowbar, just screaming at me. Yeah. My phone was nowhere to be seen. And he just
I was telling him to be quiet. He's going to wake the kids up. You know, this whole time I'm just trying to keep it as normal as possible for my children.
Yeah.
So they managed to actually sleep through this, thank goodness. So this led to hours of us talking in riddles and talking in circles. He was drunk and he's just talking nonsense. And I think for about the next 2 hours, he sexually assaulted me. Yeah.
Can we, this is only if you feel comfortable,
mm-hmm.
but sexual assault can mean a myriad of things. It can mean, you know, touching somebody on the breast or, I don't know, trying to kiss somebody. There's all sorts of things that can mean. Would you mind just telling us a little bit more, as much as you feel comfortable, what
yeah.
you mean by over a period of a couple of hours he sexually assaulted you?
Yeah, so he, at that point, he did try to strangle me, and the sexual assault was orally and digitally until he fell asleep.
Because over here, I don't know about over there, but over here in Australia, in Victoria, that is absolutely a rape. Is that what it's yeah. known as in New Zealand?
No. Really? So here it's known as indecent assault.
Isn't that, well, interesting is the wrong word, but over here an indecent assault is where you touch somebody and it's called in indecent circumstances. So that might be you touch them on the outside of their clothing. You might touch the outside of their breast. You might, I don't know, put your hand down the top of their, down at top and touch somebody's breast or bottom. Like an indecent assault is,
It did. I remember thinking, like, indecent assault? That doesn't even sum up what happened.
No.
It just seems so minimal.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Mm. I'd never understood that term.
No. I mean, it's like an umbrella for every type of sexual assault, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all under that one umbrella, but they are poles apart. Because an indecent assault, you could grab somebody's arm and say stop that or no or whatever, but when you're talking about being choked, being orally and anally raped, did you say anally
digitally.
Raped?
No.
Oh, I do apologise.
That's okay.
Okay, but being raped like you were.
Yeah.
That's just one under murder over here, really.
Yeah.
Or manslaughter. Yeah. I mean, oh, gee, okay. And so during all this, did you say in our conversations, which are quite minimal, but did you say that at some point one of your kids came in?
No, that was the second time.
Oh, right.
Yeah, no, my children actually slept through this, so I was thankful for that.
Okay. And with this, so this is the second time he's come into the house, but this time he has raped you, yeah? Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
And you're saying there's another time?
Yes.
Oh,
which is worse.
Did the police attend on this? Were the police advised this time?
Yeah, so I mean, he fell asleep. I went to my kids and fell asleep. I was exhausted. And he left the next morning. I rang the police and reported it. And I remember the policewoman who had dealt with me all these previous times came and she was nearly in tears. I remember her saying, we should have got you that alarm. Mm. We should have listened to you. Mm. We should have got it. And I'm thinking, yeah, that would have been great. Mm. Thanks. Mm. But late now. And this was my first experience with a really serious charge like that. Like,
I mean, it was my first experience with a rape kit, for example, and it was my first experience being interviewed by police. So, yeah, I mean, some things people don't think about, which I didn't realize until the time, was that we had detectives come into the house and they had to take all the bedding, and I had to give over all my clothes that I was wearing at the time, and you're not allowed to go to the bathroom, you're not allowed to eat or drink water. And you know, you don't get that bedding back, you don't get those clothes back, so you have to buy all that yourself afterwards. Like, there's small things like that that people don't realize. And you go and do the rape kit and you have no clothes to get changed into, so they provide you with these oversized clothes that you would never wear. Like, there's just so many steps to it that you don't think about. And I remember they took me in to go and get interviewed, and I'm wearing pajamas because that's what I had on at the time. And so it's broad daylight, all the neighbors can see, and I'm walking out to a police car in pajamas. And then we did an interview. The interview took hours, and that's all recorded, videotaped, still sitting in my pajamas in the police station. It's about lunchtime now, and having to walk through the station. And then I remember they took me to a doctor's office, which in the room that they take you to is upstairs. I had to walk through the doctor's office with everyone waiting to go see the doctor with three detectives, and I'm wearing my pajamas, and they're carrying all these paper bags full of all my stuff. And I was like, this is the most humiliating experience of my life.
It would be fairly obvious, I think, to just about anyone. Particularly the fact that you're in your pajamas, and as you said, detectives with paper bags. I mean, this is unbelievable.
I
don't know about anyone else listening to this, but I am shaking my head at, as you say, the humiliation, the degradation, the embarrassment. And, you know, what would have been – I'm still struggling with a couple of things. Well, I'm struggling with the whole thing. But the fact that the pajamas, so you've had them – you put them on, or you had them on when you were raped. Is that right?
Yes, yeah.
So I'm thinking of all the contamination – that is happening with those pajamas. What I don't know where to start, but those pajamas, unfortunately, they should have also been with all the bedding, all the other evidence that the police have collected, because by and to do an interview in your pajamas in a police station, I my goodness. While we're on this, you've mentioned a number of times about a rape kit. Yeah. Could you explain, I'm not either too sure, what a rape kit is? What do you mean by rape kit?
Yeah. So I remember going into the room and with the detective, and there is a doctor present, male doctor, and a female nurse to help you through it. So you're having to explain exactly what happened to them again. So this is maybe the third or fourth time you've told your story that day in detail. And they start, I guess, examining you. They start in the least invasive way. So they'll get, like, mouth swabs, hair sample, fingernail cuttings. And the whole time you have to stand on a piece of paper so that anything that comes off your body goes onto the piece of paper, and then they can collect it at the end. So, I mean, after something like this has happened, they're swabbing everywhere and you are completely naked by the end of it. And it is, again, one of the most humiliating experiences, no matter who's doing it, because I have to say that the doctor and the nurse on that occasion were amazing. Mm. They were so good. Mm. I can't thank them enough. They made me comfortable. But no matter what, I was still really embarrassed. Mm. And I didn't have any support with me at that time. Mm. I didn't want anyone to come with me. So it was just me, this doctor, and this nurse.
Were you offered by the police to have a support person, like they?
I was. I was. Yeah. I just was so humiliated.
Well, that's one thing they've done right. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely, they offered me that.
Mm. I just want to go back there. So, is this after your interview?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And because here, you would be interviewed very, very briefly. Just so that the detectives have an idea of what has happened, and so that the detectives could brief the doctor and the nurse as to what they needed. For instance, if you'd been anally raped, they'd obviously need swabs. If you'd been orally raped, you know, the fact that you'd been choked, you'd be asking the doctor, can you take, you know, photos of this, photos of that. But so then, so this is after you've been interviewed, whereas I just can't get my head around all this. And the other thing is, with your pajamas, so they then put them, eventually they put them into an exhibit bag, do they? At the doctor and the nurse?
Do.
Who?
Yeah.
Fucking Ray. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, after that, which takes about 2 hours.
Oh, yeah, hours.
To do.
Yep.
You haven't eaten, you haven't drunk anything, you're exhausted, and then you're allowed to go and have a shower. And I think having a shower was the only time I'd been alone that whole time. And that's when it hits you.
Mm.
And I just remember being given these oversized clothes that, you know, I wouldn't be caught dead in, you know, and having no toiletries, I can't even brush my hair. It was just, you almost felt like a prisoner, to be fair. Like it felt.
Mm, yeah.
It was, yeah.
You know, I've just interviewed in the last couple of weeks, I've interviewed a woman called Gloria who went through a terrible sexual assault, a rape. And she's started this. Because of the process of exactly what you're saying, that she had nothing to change into, all she wanted to do was brush her teeth, go to the toilet, all that sort of thing. And she's got these little packages that she's trying to give out to police stations or hospitals where people are taken that have been sexually assaulted, and they're called, I think it's called Thinking of You, and they contain, let's say, toothbrush and toothpaste, some deodorant, some, you know, nice, clean, new underwear.
I love that.
Yeah, maybe a T-shirt and a pair of, say, track pants or something like that. But that sounds to me like that is exactly what you would have appreciated.
Yes.
Just some care and something to make you feel, I don't know, safe and, oh, gee.
Yeah.
Mm.
That was a tough day, definitely.
Mm. So this is the second time, and this is where the policewoman has said, I wish that I would have given you that safety alarm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in the scheme of things, so continue on.
Yeah, so the police found him. They knew where he went, and he was arrested, and then he didn't get bail, so he was on remand in jail.
Mm.
I think he was in for a few months. During that time, he was able to contact me several times. So the way in which he was doing so was by sending mail to our children, but within that mail was, you know, well, my kids couldn't read. They were babies then. So you knew what the underlying sort of message was. You read between the lines and knew what he was trying to tell you.
And what was he trying to tell you?
Oh, I love you and you mean everything to me. Yeah, all of that sort of stuff. And there was one occasion where he was able to phone through to me, which, so, I mean, I'd make complaints about all of this and received a letter of apology that it won't happen again. But
from who? Who did you receive the letter
from? The prison. Yeah, okay. From the prison, because he was being sent to different prisons each time. So you're not always dealing with the same people. And I think on this occasion, I received a phone call on my cell phone, and it was a woman, and she's saying, "Oh, hi, my partner is in the same cell as your partner, and he wants to talk to you. Can I transfer the call through?"
Goodness me.
I'm like, what? Mm. I didn't even know you could do this. You know, I'm like sitting there like, what? And then next minute I can hear him. And yeah, he's talking to me through the phone.
There's so much incompetence here.
So yeah, I hung up, reported that. He wasn't charged or anything for that.
Why would you? Sorry, that's being sarcastic.
I know, same. Oh. So yeah, there was a like at this time I was going through family court to try and get parenting orders for the kids and protection order. In total, I think I applied for a protection order 3 times.
Don't.
And
surely
only got it on the
Come on, this is ridiculous.
I only got it on the 3rd time.
Why? What was the reason that they didn't give it to you the 1st 2 times?
I don't even know. It was so confusing. So yes, I'm a highly educated woman, but I had no reason to know a lot of this law.
But why? But why would you?
Exactly.
This is stuff that, unless you have been through something like this, you'd never really think about it.
Yeah, and often when lawyers are talking to you, they're talking how they talk.
Yeah.
I don't know half of what they're saying. Also, mindful that at the same time I'm going through relationship property and trying to get an agreement there, and I'm going through the criminal court. So three courts, basically. Mm. And I don't know what's going on, you know, having just gone through everything I've gone through, all I wanted to do is protect the kids.
What's the difference, a parenting order? Oh, I suppose it's fairly obvious looking at it now. A parenting order and a protection order. So the protection order is to protect the kids from him, but the parenting order is to give you sole rights for parenting. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. So I make all the decisions for my children. So I have full custody of them.
Mm. And that was granted first off, was it, the parenting order?
Yeah, that was granted, yes. Oh. I had to fight for that, though, through court. It wasn't just handed to me. I remember it had been less than a month, and we appeared in court together. I thought he was going to be via video. And he was in the same room as me. This was, 3 weeks after that incident had happened. I just remember being a crying mess through the whole procedure, and he fought for it.
He wanted to – he was asking for co-parenting rights.
Yeah. So what I realized really early on with parenting order is that – it almost doesn't matter what the other party has done, the other parent has done, they still have rights to be a parent and to see their children.
Yes.
So even though they had done this, they had witnessed a lot of the stuff that had been done, he still had rights to see the children. So I realized fighting that wasn't worth it. Mm. So he was given access to the children.
Was he given access to the children under, you know, supervision, like somebody supervising him?
Yeah. Okay. So I don't. So in New Zealand, we would normally you pay like a social worker.
Yeah.
Or there'd be like a contract.
Yeah.
And they can have time. He wouldn't pay it. He refused to pay it. So we had to come to an agreement that his mother was to be the mediator, I guess, for that time.
Oh, gee.
And can I just say here that his mother, the day after this happened, when there's police still here, she turned up to the house and said, "It wasn't really rape, was it?" Like, boy.
And she's, it wasn't, and she's really. The supervisor for
she's the kids. Supervisor, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's a tough thing, because I've spoken to a lot of fathers who have been they're not allowed to see their kids because of a crime they've committed.
Yeah.
And I do understand that both parents have rights, but at what stage do you say, no, those rights are no longer acceptable? Or like, I think that the supervision, I think a father should be able to see their kids as much as they can, but there is a line. There's a line, yeah. Surely. And
exactly.
The fact that he has broken into the house, he's frightened the kids, they've seen you. Oh, gee. And what I don't understand as well is the fact that you've got a parenting order but also a protection order. It's like the two of them, like a protection order is, how can you protect your children if they're with him?
Yeah.
Righto. Okay. So what a nightmare.
Yeah. So,
sorry, just one other thing. Do you know, did the kids ever indicate to you that they did want to, like, did the kids ever get any say in this? And were they old enough to voice if they wanted to go with daddy or?
They absolutely did want to go with their dad.
Right. Okay.
Because, like, in their eyes, they missed their dad and they didn't understand why they couldn't see him because he'd been here every day of their life.
Yeah. Okay.
We've been living in the same house, so they couldn't make sense of it. They were very young, very young at the time. So, yeah, they did want to see their dad.
Mm. I suppose I don't have an issue with him having access to the children, but I just think his mother is not the sort of person that I would have thought would have been a good choice as a supervisor, let's say. It should have been somebody independent. I just that's the issue I have with him. Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is 3 weeks after you've been raped, and you're having all these the issues in court. How were you treated by the court staff? What is your experience with that?
It was a very confusing time because I was in so many different courts and so many different I was meeting with lawyers all the time.
Mm.
I remember it being really stressful, the cost of lawyers at the time. Mm. Just having very little understanding of what was going on. And I'm thinking, well, this is me. Imagine anyone else going through this. How do they navigate their way? And there wasn't, at that point, there wasn't really any, like victim advocacy for me. There wasn't really anyone supporting me through that part of it. So I just had to kind of get on with it. It was very, very confusing. So that happened in August 2019, and he wasn't properly sentenced until December 2020.
Was he remanded that whole time?
No. So a few months here and there whenever he would breach. So he was, I don't know what you guys call it in Australia, but he was given EM bail, electronically monitored bail.
Okay.
So he had to wear a bracelet. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. And how did that go? Did he try and see you or?
Yes. Yes, quite a lot. So constant texts, emails, messages through people, letters in the mail. At one point, I got messaged through Pinterest.
Yep.
Didn't know that you could even message through there, but you can somehow.
He found a way.
He found a way. Would make up different email addresses, just any which way he could, he would contact me. Yeah.
With this second incident where he's raped you, what was the support like from the police? Apart from, I understand the woman has said, the policewoman has, you know, said, I should have got you that alarm.
Yeah.
How did you find the response from the police? Because I imagine that through all this, the police could have given you a person, a support person or somebody almost like a triage person that you could ring or...
So I might have confused you. So this the sexual assault was the first account, was the first time. I haven't yet got to the second part where the actual rape occurred.
In week two next week, you'll hear more about Sarah's struggles with the justice system, the attitude of the police, which comes from not understanding the complexities of domestic and family violence, which so often includes sexual assault or the threat of it. Coercive control, they don't get that either, I don't think, and not understanding the reasons that women, or men for that matter, stay in an abusive relationship. It's not just the police, it's the justice system as a whole. And the community from which those in the justice and police systems are chosen from or represent. Only this week I read an article about a judge who didn't send a form-up principal to jail for his, what the judge described as, brazen child abuse of children in his care because he was, quote, otherwise of good character, unquote. Oh, gee. So, and what about the children that he'd abused? The effect on them will more often than not be lifelong. And this former principal was of otherwise good character. Oh, anyway, I need to get off my soapbox and allow you to enjoy the rest of your week and await part two of Sarah's amazing resilience, strength and courage, which she has got in bucket loads. Thanks. Have a good week. As you've probably noticed, we've moved to a new platform called Acast. I think that's the right expression, I've got no idea. And my previous reviews haven't transferred over. I need reviews. Could you do me a favour and put up a review? And thank you so much for your support and patronage. With your help, I can give you that little bit extra. Thanks.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.